member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Oh, sorry. I was daydreaming. Confused.
I said I wasn't ready yet. He really wasn't ready.
I didn't realize I was trying to. We can't get onto YouTube here. Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It's Saturday, the 18th of June, Anno Domini 2016. And you lucky people, eventually you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, could have been earlier, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, care of shoes, don't get to lose, blah, blah.
Don't worry, folks. We're professionals.
We're professionals.
We've been doing this for 27 years.
Don't try this at home. Seriously. I'm not kidding. Don't even try this apparently in a studio. Don't try this anywhere at any time for any reason.
Could cause bodily harm.
Yeah. Before we do anything, I want to say happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. I hope you are treated with the infinitesimal amount of respect you deserve. And I also want to say that although this is not a fun a pledge drive, but you should know that we are significantly short on our budget this year. So if you are of a mind, we would be honored and delighted if you would make a pledge. You can do that at jazz901.org. You can pledge securely online. Just go to jazz901.org and you'll see on the right there, there's a whole little box for becoming a member of Jazz 90.1, and it is secure, and we don't sell you blah 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 blah. You know all that. So we would be honored. We're about $5,000. Well, actually, I think we're significantly more than that, but we'd like to raise $5,000. So if you would be generous enough to do that, particularly those of you who have not yet become members. We would appreciate that. Thanks. And now on to the news. Nothing happened this week. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. No, there was this one little thing that happened. Apple had their Worldwide Developers Conference. It's WWDC. I keep trying to make that what would, and then I can't figure out what the other two words would be. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference this year was full of incremental updates to OSs for the Mac, iPhone, Watch, and TV, as well as moves to open up services like Siri and iMessage to developers. OS 10 is now going to be called Mac OS. We've already got iOS and Watch OS and TV OS, so now we'll have Mac OS.
And iOS is at 10 this year, so that would have confused people.
That
iOS
would have
10
confused
and Mac
people.
OS 10.
Right. And this iteration will be called Sierra. So we're off animals and we're on to places around California.
Yeah, the last three versions have been California landmarks.
Right. The public beta will launch in July, with the final version coming in the fall. One of the big focuses of the new OS is continuity across devices. There are other smaller updates as well, including a way to unlock your Mac using your Apple Watch. Sierra will also bring Siri to the desktop. You'll be able to use voice commands to find files, search the web, send messages, other standard Siri functions. You'll be able to use Apple, but not in an office setting. Well, if you have a door to your office, then yeah, but not in a cubicle setting. You'll be able to use Apple Pay to make payments online through Safari. Authentication will work through Touch ID, either through your phone or Apple Watch. Watch OS 3 brings a host of updates. Perhaps the most important is it loads apps 7 times faster than the previous OS. iOS changes include complete redesigns for music and maps, new notifications, and an expanded role for 3D Touch. Maps is getting a whole new feel. Its redesign will show more of a map when users open the app. Users can also book rides through Maps, pay for them with Apple Pay, and make restaurant reservations. Navigation is getting easier, too, with directions that include traffic. Apple is revamping iMessage to include bigger emoji as well as suggestions for turning certain keywords into emoji. People can share songs directly from Apple Music, write notes to one another in their own handwriting. There are animated effects like strobe lights, balloons, and confetti. And invisible ink hides messages until they're swiped over. Invisible ink, people! Photos is being updated with new features to help you organize and manage your collection. You can organize your collection automatically by person using facial recognition. The app is also adding memories, which bundles together photos according to events and locations. iOS 10 will now feature voice transcriptions, which automatically transcribe voicemails and offer them up like texts. Transcribing voicemails. Amazing. Apple's also introducing a single sign-on system that lets you log into all of your network apps at once. Siri, which now services over 2 billion requests per day, is now opening up to developers. There were a bunch of other announcements, but this is only a two-hour show. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple introduces new features. Your choices are, wow, can't wait, nice catch-up game, Apple, and you Mac people are funny. So far, we've only got 22 people who voted, and the vast majority of you are saying you Mac people are funny. And we know you'll have more to say about this because, well, you're Apple people, and you don't like even the thought that you might be dissed. And so if you scroll down on the right side of the website, you will see under Fascinating Stuff, the first choice is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, and so far the first thing on there is 17 June 16, Apple introduces new features. And of course, if you'd like to discuss this some more, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. And before Steve gets to talk...
Wait a minute. I'm going to jump in for a second, too. Does this mean, since they're naming all the stuff California stuff,
yeah,
that the final one will be San Andreas Fault, and it just sort of slides out into...
San Andreas Fault? Yeah, exactly. Right.
As long as they get the Rock.
Right, right. and Carla Gugino. I'll watch anything with Carla Gugino in it.
And go sliding out into the ocean.
Yep. Yep. I watched the developers' conference keynote, as I do for Apple and for Microsoft and for Google and for pretty much everybody. And I go to take notes, but I was absolutely shocked. And the only notes I took, I titled my page, What I Didn't Know Apple Couldn't Do. Maps. You guys finally got traffic on your route. I'm shocked you didn't have traffic before. You got something called Nearby, which will tell you where nearby things are. I can't believe you didn't have that. I had that 7 years ago.
We did, but they never highlighted it.
Well, no, but they said it was new. They said it was new. So I have to only listen to what they say. They have LSTM, which is for long, short-term memory. Everybody else calls it contextual understanding, of course. We've had that on Google for a long time. That's where you can say, you know, who was the 16th president of the United States? And it says Abraham. It's 14th president of the United States. Who was Abraham Lincoln? And then you can say, who was his wife? And it'll say Mary Todd. Who were their children? And it'll name their children. It's that contextual understanding that knows his refers back to the last query, and there refers back to the last two queries. We don't know how deep it goes under Apple, but it's nice to see them doing that. Photos have search. Seriously? Now, I know Google Photos, Google is search, so I get that, you know, Google search is going to be kind of amazing. But, you know, I can go into Google search and say, Amelia, and all my pictures of Amelia come up. Memories, good. I'm glad you've got that now. Siri will now manage some third-party apps, and apparently you used to be limited in the way you could say things to Siri because they made a big deal of the fact that you can ask Siri to do anything in multiple ways now, which I didn't know. iTunes has a For You section now. That's new? Really? Also a new music section. That must have been there before. I don't know why they're touting it now. News, suddenly you can get categories and subscriptions? I'm kind of shocked you didn't have those. Phone, voicemail transcription? Again, that's been around forever. And you can move your work phone to your iPhone? Great, good for you. And predictive typing? God bless you. Terrific to have that. Mail now comes with a conversation mode. I don't know that a lot of people like conversation mode. The number one complaint I get about Gmail over the last, I don't know, however long Gmail's been around, is they hate conversation mode. But now you have it. You can now do split screen multitasking, but only on the iPad. And you can unlock your Mac with your watch. I can't tell you the last time I typed in a password for my machine. But you know what? I'll be completely honest. I was shocked. I assumed Apple could do all of those things. And I'm just kind of shocked that they couldn't. And I'm glad to see that, you know, Apple is now somewhere close to the 21st century with that stuff. But I'm honestly shocked that you guys couldn't do that up to now.
And I'm wondering, because we could. Unlocking your computer with your watch was a third-party app, not built into the OS. But everything else, it's been doing for years. And I'm wondering if they just reminded people that it was there. And we've made it a little better. We've added a few more features. But you know, did you know you could do transcriptions? You know, that's been in there for 20 years. You know, text-to-speech has been in there.
They certainly made it. Well, that's what I'm saying. Right. I can't believe it wasn't like there for a while. Yeah. They made all this stuff sound like it's brand new right now, first time ever.
Yeah.
And I couldn't possibly have been more shocked. So I'm glad that indeed many of these things did exist already. It was very weird to go through that thing and think, holy crow. I can't believe you can't do that.
Can you get to YouTube?
No.
So the school proxy servers have just must.
The school proxy server is in fact down.
They must have cranked up. No, I got to the proxy server and was able to sign in, but it's still not letting me to YouTube.
It's telling me it's not accessible.
I at least got through the proxy server, but I can't open
YouTube.
Well,
aren't you special?
I can open YouTube. I can't open YouTube.
Well, he's a Mac. He's got the Mac.
He's got a Mac, exactly. One of the things you've always been able to do is bypass your proxy on a Mac, and that's lovely for you. Okay. I'm actually glad to hear that these things are not new, although they certainly were all touted as brand new, never-before-seen features ever anywhere.
Enhanced.
And people were applauding them as if they were a brilliant innovation.
So clearly the audience
of developers didn't know you could do that stuff.
I think what it probably was is now the developers have access to these features. They've always been in there, but only Apple could do them. And so users can get traffic. Users can do this.
It's not the way they were presenting it.
Because they were presenting it to developers. And so for the first time, a developer can do something inside Maps.
I would like that to be true.
Other than send it a URL.
I would actually like that to be true.
Yeah.
I would prefer that Apple has been doing these things for a while, and now third-party developers get at it, rather than, really, you couldn't do this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of thought this,
we were talking
this can't
off
be
air,
right.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
We've been able to do that.
I would certainly prefer to be able to see that. I mean, I realize some of it is new, like conversation mode and apparently traffic.
Well, we called it threading for a long time, but a couple of versions ago, they renamed it conversations. And the first thing people do is turn it off, same on Google.
Yeah. Everybody turns it off. Nobody likes it. I don't know why, whatever, but people don't like it. Yeah, I'm glad to see that's because it shocked me. I mean, that stuff shocked me. I can understand some things are new, like unlocking your Mac with your watch. I get that. That's, you know, so what? That's new. Big deal. But a lot of that stuff just kind of actually shocked me. And I'm glad to see that it's not that way. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We will get to you in just a minute. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. We'll be back. With a whole lot more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edrick.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Jack from Orange County, New York on the line. Welcome, Jack.
How you doing, guys? Happy Father's Day.
Peachy. We're peachy. Thank you. Same to you. Now, you're just from Orange County? Are you, like, living in a tent somewhere near the ocean or what? What?
It's Moody.
Oh, Moody, how are you?
Not too bad. Been a while.
It has been a while.
I have an issue with a MacBook Air. I think it's an A1466. It doesn't boot. It comes up to a folder with an icon, a question mark, which I believe is telling me that it's not recognizing the SSD drive. So I tried to do a recovery, and I went to the disk utilities, and I'm not seeing anything except disk zero, which is the install, I guess, partition or something. So I'm wondering how I can, if the drive is bad or if it's the logic board or some other issue.
Yes, it's either the drive or the logic board. try a different.
Is there any way of narrowing it down? That's an expensive drive to replace if it's not the drive, and I don't know if it's worth replacing the logic board.
Try a different internal drive and see if that works or not.
Okay.
And if it does work, it's the drive. If it doesn't work, it's the logic board.
Okay, so there's no other way around it.
Take the drive out of that computer and put it into a different computer.
Another MacBook Air. I guess I could pull the drive out of that. It doesn't matter if it's not the one that went with the original system. If I can get into the disk utility on that, then a new drive should resolve the issue.
It has to be the right connector. They've changed connectors over the years.
Yeah, no, it's the same connector because I've had both out. The other one won't boot either, but that one, when I get the chime, I just get a blank screen. So I'm thinking that may be an LCD on that one, but I'm not sure. But the one I'm working on right now, it does boot up to that folder with the question mark. Yeah. And then if I do the command R, I believe it is, I can get into the disk utility.
Yeah, the question mark means it can't find a boot volume. You can always try booting an external drive and see if it sees the internal drive. But that still doesn't differentiate between the internal drive has failed and the drive connection has failed. But you can always boot externally.
All right, so the easiest solution is to try that other drive, assuming it's the same connection.
Right, it likely won't be optimized, but you don't care because that's not what you're putting it in for.
Yeah, I just want to see if it's recognized it, and that'll tell me if it's the board or the drive.
Right.
Right.
Okay, and then one other question. The first time I went into the disk utility, it asked me for my network password, and it hasn't done that the past couple of times I tried to boot into it. Is there another command to re-enter my network password? You know, select my Wi-Fi and enter the password.
There's another checkbox you probably had checked on to remember the password, so it doesn't have to ask you again.
Okay, but I tried to... I thought I tried to access the online install, and it didn't do anything. I'll double-check that. Maybe I just overlooked something.
If you need to, you can go to the Wi-Fi menu and rejoin your wireless network.
The Wi-Fi menu is in the disk utility, or is there another menu that comes up prior to that?
It's in the menu bar of every program. It's because the menu bar is always there, no matter what program you're in.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your input, and again, happy Father's Day.
Thanks.
Same to you. And I did see your post in the forums. But I don't know that stuff, so I didn't answer it. Sorry.
Not a problem.
All right, thanks. Have a great Father's Day.
I'm a little break at work, so I figured I'd make the phone call.
There you go.
Take care.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. I did think about it. I did think about answering it. And that is, in fact, the answer I would have given. But I thought, I'm probably not my place. That's not my forte. So I didn't say anything about it. Moody is one of our older members, and I certainly don't mean that in age. I simply mean that in longevity.
Member.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Okay, I'm going to assume this is Brian.
Yeah, what did I write?
Brain? Brain, yeah.
That's what my mind is now.
All right, our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York, or Pravilio, New York. It's okay. Not a problem. Hiya, Brian. What's up?
How you doing, guys?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, Actually, I just dropped an extra $25 on you just now.
Oh, God bless you, Brian. For those of you turning in a little late, we are. Yesterday, we had a little one-day pledge drive because we're thousands upon thousands short of our goal this year. And Brian was kind enough to throw in some money. Thank you.
Well, I'm actually a member. That's a little extra bonus for turning me on to Linux, because now I no longer sweat this nonsense with having to pay for Windows. Let me tell you something. It is a fantastic operating system. It's kind of likens you back to maybe Windows 98, maybe 2000 or so, because you have to interact with it somewhat.
Yep.
But it's not it's a perfectly suitable substitute, especially with the internet world we live in now. It's fine. And people worrying about, you know, this Windows thing coming up here, just call them Linux.
Well, yeah, it's exactly right. People hate change.
Of course.
Okay. So they hate the idea of Windows 10 because it's not Windows 7. And they hate the idea of Linux because it's not Windows.
So that's why they're going to stop naming Windows? So the new version is still Windows, so it's not a change.
Right. don't laugh.
Another thing to say, haven't really heard you guys say, but I'd like to let people know that you can just put it onto a disk or a thumb drive, and you can run it off of. You don't have to disrupt your computer. If you just want to fool around and just, you know, see if you like it or not, you can run it right off a drive. You don't have to do anything to your computer.
That's exactly right. You can run it from anything. You do have to remember that if you're running it off a CD or off a thumb drive, it's going to be much slower than it would be normally, because everything has to be uncompressed as it's loaded in, and the connector for your thumb drive is not as fast as the connector for your hard drive, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, you're right. You can run it for right from that thumb drive and enjoy playing with it and learning on it and making that decision as to whether or not that's the sort of thing you want to do. And you're right, because nowadays we do 99.999% of everything we do on the internet alone. And that's the whole idea behind Chromebooks. You don't need a full operating system.
And I also, just so you know, though, like if someone decides that they want to, you know, run it off a thumb drive, or you're probably not going to get your internet connectivity, but you certainly can enjoy, you know, you can just pretend that like your Google's working. It may or may not work for you, but it's not going to loan. It's probably not going to, you know, change your drivers for your Wi-Fi card or whatever.
Right. But, it depends on what Wi-Fi card you have.
Kind of punt it around a little bit and see, you know, get a taste for it. But I downloaded Mint Rosa. It was a little bit of effort, but you know, what do you want for nothing?
It takes a little bit of customization, and you're done. You know,
God forbid you have to participate, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. But
in
Apple.
Want to say thanks, and you know, give you a little bump there, and hope you guys a little mini fun drive. Come on, people, work over.
There you go. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, guys.
Brian's got a point. Everybody should fork over. I meant Brian's got a point. When you have to make a change anyway, why not make the change to at least try something different? And as Brian says, you can try it without having to install it. You can. Directions are all over the internet on how to install a bootable copy of many different versions of Linux onto a thumb drive, which you can then boot from on most machines. And without having to go into the BIOS, some you have to go into the BIOS and make a change, but most of them you can boot without having to make that change. And that lets you play with Linux before you ever have to worry about installing it in order to try it, right? So we have people all the time who are saying, you know, I've got this old laptop that's just sitting around doing nothing. What if I put Linux on it? You should. Or Cloud Ready from Neverware. Which essentially turns it into a Chromebook. Either one of those is a good alternative, because Brian is also right. Brian, you're getting a lot of kudos today. Brian is also right that we spend most of our time on the internet. And for those of us who do indeed spend most of our time on the internet, in fact, I would venture to say there are vast majority of us nowadays spend all of our time on the internet, and the very few things we do that isn't, that, you know, it's not on the internet, we could do on the internet, like email, and writing and spreadsheets and photo editing and video editing and all those other things, and either for free or for very, very, very cheap. So it seems to me that you know, trying those things out and giving it a shot, you know, Linux is free. The Chrome OS is free. So, you know, you'd have to either buy a Chromebook or have an old laptop to run Neverware, but cloud ready from Neverware. But, you know, once you do that, I run both. I have, and Steve's going to hate hearing this too. I have an old Mac that I put cloud ready on. And it just updated yesterday to the newest and latest version, and everything works great. It's very cool, and honestly, playing with all these different things is part of what keeps you young. You know, get your head working.
That used to be what computers were initially for. You were tinkering.
That's right.
You would tinker building it. You would tinker writing your own software to do things you wanted to, and we're sort of back to that stage now, where we can tinker with them. But the problem is, computers have become so embedded in our lives that we can't live without them. We have to get email to get work done. You know, we have to write stuff. And we hear that all the time in our shop. Someone's, you know, computer's broken and it has to come in for service. And well, I can't live without it. Well, you're going to have to. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So here's buy another computer so you have a spare.
Yeah, there you go.
But these days, most people have a smartphone. So that is your spare computer.
Right.
And you can still get email and still get an email. It's not as convenient as a big screen. But it's still done.
I had a friend who did that. He brought his computer into a place I won't name, and they said it would take several days to fix. Apparently it was in some dire circumstances. He had apparently dropped it in the water.
You
a laptop.
Was
yeah.
It worse?
Yeah, yeah. And so he said I can't live without it, so he went out and bought a Chromebook.
Yep.
You know, a couple of $100, and he was up and running. He said, you know, I got back my real laptop. I don't even use it anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't need it.
He realized said, I didn't use all that much on.
Right.
I went on the web. I looked at email. I played, you know, play games on the web.
Right. That's exactly right. And people are finding that they live most of their lives on the web. Why pay for an entire system, most of which you will never use? And certainly why keep paying for it? I think we're going to see, you know, once Microsoft institutes this yearly fee for using Windows, we're going to see a lot more people looking at alternatives, whether it's Macs or Linux or Chromebooks. And for so very, very many people, a Chromebook is really all you ever need because you never don't do things on the web. And
even if you're not physically connected to the internet at the moment, you can still, you know, write documents, you can compose email. Remember how that's what we did in the olden days?
Yeah.
You would download all your mail and hang up from the internet because you had to pay by the minute, and you would compose all your replies, and then a few hours later, you'd dial back in again and send all your replies and get your new mail. So it's we're sort of back there now because you can get cellular Chromebooks that have cellular service to get to the internet. Your smartphone probably has a cellular hotspot feature built into it, so when you're not near public Wi-Fi, you still have your own Wi-Fi. And you pay by the minute. In this case, you're paying by the gig.
Right.
So, which is, you know, how much data your computer uses by the minute.
Right.
So we're sort of back to that dial-up day, but now you're dialing in with your smartphone over cellular.
Right. In my HP Chromebook, I get cellular service from T-Mobile. Is built in. I get 200 megs a month free.
That's what I've got on my iPad.
Which doesn't sound like a lot. But I've written whole books.
I've hardly ever run over.
Yeah.
The one time I ran over is when I forgot to turn my game off cellular data.
Yep. What I do is I turn it off, I write for a couple of hours, and then just to be on the safe side, I turn it on so it uploads the file, which, by the way, is almost zero data.
Yeah.
Right.
Because documents are so tiny.
They're tiny.
Yeah.
And so that works out actually pretty nicely. Yep.
You're not going to want to stream video over cellular.
No.
But when you're on Wi-Fi, you can download that movie to your device
right.
And then watch it when you're not on Wi-Fi.
Right. And we find that when people are open to trying the way that a Chromebook works, or the way that Linux works, or the way that a Mac works. They don't miss Windows all that much, quite frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, Apple used that line back during the Vista debacle, that, you know, if you're going to change to something radically different, you might as well switch to Mac and
right.
get all the advantages of the Mac. And okay, now remember all these people that are complaining about Windows 7. You made the switch from XP to Vista, didn't you, to get to Windows 7 now? That's all the people that are still on XP that haven't moved up.
There are many of those people. There are many of those people. But what they're finding, of course, is that they can't use any of the new stuff.
Yep.
And I get it. If you are on a limited budget, you don't want to buy a new computer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So spend $35, buy a thumb drive, put Linux on it, give it a try. If it works for you, then you can put Linux on the machine itself. And you're now up to the latest and greatest of everything without having to pay a penny to anybody.
Or, yeah, install Neverware on your current computer.
Right.
And you've got the latest version of the operating system running on the hardware you already have.
Right. And every time you go to the web, you get the latest version of their stuff, too.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not, I don't know why not. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have John from Brighton on the line. Welcome, John. Sorry to keep you waiting. What's up?
It's Don.
Don, sorry.
Well, what happened is I crashed my computer. I thought I was stopping the upgrade to Windows 10, and doing so, I crashed the whole thing. I'm wondering, how do I boot Linux into it? Because it won't boot now.
Right. Here's what you can do. You need to do this, obviously, on a machine that is working.
Yeah.
You go to whichever version of Linux you like. Whether it's Mint or it's Ubuntu or it's Xubuntu or it's, you know, any one of 1,000.
What do you suggest as a beginner for it?
Mint is very nice. There are multiple versions of Mint. You can see the different versions.
Mint, like the peppermint?
Yeah, peppermint,
yeah, like
spearmint, wintergreen.
And that's at linuxmint.com. And you can see the latest version, actually. There's 17.3, I think, is the latest one, and there's a bunch of different versions. Sarah is 18. Oh, 18 is there. What's nice is if you go to all versions, you'll see them listed there. Obviously, the latest one everybody thinks is the best. The good news is under status. One of the lovely things that the folks at Mint do is they only use the LTS versions, long-term support. Each version is supported for 5 years.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to change very often if you don't want to, and they will keep updating and providing all of that for 5 years. So what you do is you download that, and once you've made the download, there are two versions, Cinnamon and Mate, actually, I believe is how they pronounce it. And once you've done that, you can put it onto a thumb drive. And then if your system will let you boot from a thumb drive, you can actually try it without having to install it. But once you've done that, there will be one of the choices at boot up. And also, I believe there's an icon on the desktop. But there's a choice to install Mint, and then you will have a secondary choice of sharing the hard drive with whatever operating system is already on there, which you obviously don't want to do
now,
right? Or taking over the whole hard drive.
How do I get it to boot from the thumb drive?
Well, I don't. It depends. It depends on what your computer is like, but generally F2 or F12 during the boot process will bring you to the BIOS. And then once you're in the BIOS, you can say, you can change the boot disk and the boot order.
Okay, that's what I didn't know. It's So I use one of those two.
Well, or escape. Or
delete or delete. F10. It depends on your... A lot of times what you'll see on screen is press something. Press F2 to enter setup. And that is what you want to get into, is the setup that let you pick a different boot volume.
Okay, well, I'm going to try that then.
Good for you. Let us know how it works.
I want to go to someone and have Windows 7 reinstalled, but I think since I already have 10 on the other computer, I can play with, it gives me a chance then to play with Linux.
I love that attitude, Don.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, gentlemen.
All right, good luck. Have fun. Let us know how it works.
I am a member.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
Bye.
Yep. I see. This is what I love. I've already got a good computer. I've got this old machine. Let's play.
Yep.
Now, as long as his hard drive hasn't died. I mean, if that's what the problem is, obviously he can't install it on the hard drive. He could still boot from the thumb drive and try that. But in general.
What's interesting is that, you know, terabyte hard drives are, what, $100?
Yeah.
Oftentimes, or less, or if you're just testing the play, 500 gig, you'll often pay, say you want a 128 gig flash drive or 256 gig flash drive, you're going to pay that $100 for, say, a 256 gig flash drive, or just get a hard drive and put that in your computer, and that would be faster yet, and then easier to switch back and forth between the multiple OSs.
Yep, you're absolutely right. It's a very open series of things you could try nowadays, which also makes it harder. We're back off the air. We were on the air for a moment.
Let's see if it comes back.
Now we're apparently off the air again. In terms of the YouTube channel.
And now we're back on.
And now it's back on again. Okay, good to know.
Crazy.
Good to know. All right, our next caller is Zach from Brighton, New York. Hi, Zach, what's up?
Hi, I had a question about figuring out what monitor to purchase. I have a Chromebook. And I just need, it's great, but I'd like to be able to view things on a larger screen when I'm working in the office. And this has a 16 to 10 ratio. It's a 1280 by 800 is the resolution. And I just want an idea as to what type of resolution I would be looking for in a monitor since in order to not get buy too much of a monitor for the limited Chromebook resolution.
Right. Well, that's just the resolution of the internal display.
Right.
The external is often a lot better.
Okay.
And pretty much any monitor will work.
Okay.
One of the things, so in your Chromebook manual, there's probably specifications on what the external video port is.
You think we get a manual? You're so cute.
In the PDF you can download.
Yeah, in the PDF you can download.
Okay.
That's still the manual, right?
Yeah, right.
I didn't say printed manual.
Well, yeah, that's right. You didn't. Okay.
And he didn't say it was on the computer either.
Yeah.
There will be a specification of what the external video is capable of as well. And then when you're looking at monitors, the two big things are the size of the screen and the resolution of the screen. So you can get a big monitor with a low resolution, and everything will be huge on screen.
Mm-hmm.
You can also get a small monitor with a
That
was you. All right. You can also get a small monitor with a high resolution, and they're all tiny. So there's sort of general recommendations that, in the 22 to 24 inch range, you'll often see the 1280 by 1024 or 1920 by 1080. And in fact, many monitors are now using television resolutions. They'll say they're 720p or 1080p because that actually makes them a little easier to make on the same assembly line as a television.
Right.
And so you can get, 24-inch 1080p monitor, plug that in, and then you'll be able to either do what's called mirroring to see the same image on both screens or spanning, which puts basically one giant desktop. So you can use the smaller Chromebook screen for, say, tools, or have your Twitter feed running over there. And then on the big screen, you've got your web and mail and more windows on the second screen.
Okay. All righty. I'll see if I can find those specifications there.
Generally, you can find them also at the you'll find them at the manufacturer's website.
Okay. Yep. I'll check again.
So, for example, what I did with mine was I said, I just went into Google and I said, I put in my Chromebook model number, company name, you know, like Toshiba Chromebook 14 specs.
Got it.
Yep. And the other thing you can do is you can use your television as a monitor. Most flat screen televisions have HDMI or even VGA on the back. And so that's the other question is, what port does your Chromebook have for video?
Most of them have HDMI.
Yeah, most of them have the HDMI.
Some of them have mini HDMI.
I have a cable already. Yep. I purchased one.
Try just plugging it into your television and see if
that's
enough.
There.
Yep.
Cool. And then what is it? The Chromecast video.
Right.
You can do it wirelessly. So you can be on your couch with your computer and wirelessly send the video up to your television.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
very
a lot of fun.
Yep.
Yeah, I like the Chromebook a lot. It doesn't require geological time to boot up. it's really great.
From a cold boot, it's 8 seconds. It actually takes another 5 or 6 seconds if you've got it set to automatically unlock from your phone or your watch. So that actually, you know, makes the time even longer, and that sort of ports me off. It's booted up already, and now I'm waiting for it to it's still shorter than typing in my password because I have a very long password.
Mm-hmm.
But still.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you're right. It's very quick to boot up. It's very quick to run. It's an amazing little device.
Speaking of which, do you have any experience with this Google app, the Google Remote Desktop application? Have you played with it or used it at all?
Do you know it's on my list of things to do, and I just have never never gotten to it. And I need to, and I know that. I know that, and I just haven't gotten to it yet. It's sitting right here on my desktop, in point of fact, and in my little bar at the bottom, and I just haven't had a chance to play with it at all.
Got it. Well, thanks for your time, gentlemen.
All right, have fun.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. There's also a device called a Chrome Box, which you can get as an all-in-one computer, very much like the iMacs.
Yep.
It's a 24-inch monitor with a Chromebook built into it. All you need to do is plug it into a keyboard and a mouse and a network connection, and you're done. And by plug it into a network connection, it could be wireless as well, of course. But so that's pretty cool. All right, our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. Happy Father's Day and all
you.
That wonderful stuff. My brother just gave me his old computer. He just upgraded from his 32-bit HP Pavilion with Vista.
Sorry.
And so I've got a couple. I've already put Linux Rosa on it. I'm having problems because it's a 32-bit. I can't get Chrome for it anymore.
Right.
So I'm out looking for other, because I hate anything to do with, we won't get into prejudices.
Yeah. All right, here's what you can do. You can download a product called Chromium, which is the open source version of the Chrome browser.
Okay.
Just like Chromium OS is the open source version of the Chrome OS used in Chromebooks. And in fact, it is Chromium OS that is used in Neverware's Cloud Ready.
Okay.
So I suspect it's part of Mint Rosa. So if you were to do, you know, if you go into your software thing and do a search for Chromium, Chromium, I suspect you would find a link to it if it's not already installed. And the main difference between Chrome and Chromium is that Chromium's icon is all blue.
Instead of multicolored like Chrome.
Instead of multicolored like the Google Chrome.
Chrome is always reminds me of Simon Says, and I wonder if they threw some money that way just to use those colors.
Right.
So it's one of those Simon.
Of the Simon know, devices, Simon, right. But basically, the Chrome web browser is Google's enhancement to the Chromium web browser. And the Chrome OS is Google's enhancements to the Chromium OS. And so the big differences are really fairly minimal. And honestly, I've never hit one.
Okay. I got a question on dual booting with... I carry a thumb drive with me with most of... Help me get in. People come with a question, computer questions, things like that.
Sure.
I have Hiram's on the thumb drive. Can I put a second ISO on the thumb drive? I mean, basically, if you put the thumb drive in, it looks for the ISO. What happens when there's two ISOs? Am I allowed to choose which one I boot to?
If you partition the thumb drive, you probably can. You'd have to put each ISO on its own partition.
Yeah, it would be a whole lot easier to just carry a couple of different thumb drives, though.
Okay. I've got a 4 gig I can just throw in the glove compartment.
Right. No, yes, I've seen people do it, absolutely. But it is as finicky as partitioning a regular hard drive.
All right.
So if you're comfortable with that, then you win. If you're not, then it's a lot easier to just have multiple thumb drives.
Okay. One last question on the Linux. Can I dual boot the Rosa with Cloud Ready?
I have not tried that, but I will look into it.
Separate partitions. Separate partitions.
I suspect different separate partitions would work fine.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I can hear a commercial coming up.
Yep. Thanks.
And I'll talk to you later.
Yes, you will. Have fun. Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. Holy moly, we've wasted an hour of our lives with this nonsense. But we'll get a chance to do it all again on the other side, however, because there's a whole lot more sound bites coming along with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is a mere 59 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe on the truly great and solely member-supported, and in need of that support today, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Before we get back to the phones, Steve from Greece asked if you could dual-boot Rosa and Neverware, and it doesn't look like you can do it if Rosa's installed first, at least, because while Neverware will indeed dual-boot, it has some very specific requirements at this point. Must be Windows 7, 8, 8.1, or 10, which are installed in UEFI mode. So if you have a machine with a legacy-only BIOS or a Windows install that is in legacy mode, it will not work for dual boot. This is their first dual boot version, and so it's got some fairly specific requirements. All right, back to the phones. No, we're not back to the phones. We don't have anybody to talk to. No, I don't know why you're not calling us. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And before we go any farther, we should wish everyone a very, very happy Father's Day. I hope you get a pretty nifty toy of your whatever type of toys you like to play with, that you get one of those. And also, I should remind you that we had a significant shortfall in our pledge drive this year. And so if we have just this one day thing going on, if you can find it in your hearts and in your wallets to throw a little money at us, we would be very, 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 very honored to have you do that. So if you can do that, please do. Thank you so much. We would be We've had a significant shortfall, and we'd like to not have to make any changes to dang near anything in the station.
And you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. In the upper right, there's a big Become a Member of Jazz 901 button.
Yep. All right, back to the, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would say we should also mention that the tickets to the jazz cruises are selling out fast. I believe the July cruise has sold out.
Yep.
So we've got August and September left. August is sold out too. Yeah. So just September now, Monday, September 12th. So it's a cruise on the Colonial Belle in Fairport, from Fairport to Shone Place. Live music, and there'll be food and cash bar. 2-hour cruise, great low. I've taken these cruises before, and it's really
they're really
nice. A lot of fun. Yeah,
yep. I want to take one of the lock cruises next time.
Mm. Yeah, right.
Go through the lock to
Elmira. Those are also very cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Those are very cool. Sitting in the lock while it fills up.
Yeah,
it's very, very cool. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's up?
Well, first of all, I just made a donation.
Bless you. Thank you so much.
I listen to you guys every week, and I appreciate all the advice you give. I'm in that. So I have a netbook and a desktop, I know. But my wife has a Chromebook, so we're working on that. But I upgraded my netbook to Windows 10 yesterday, and I could see why people are reluctant. It just takes a long time. But I kept getting a box that said it's an Asus. And I kept getting a box, a dialog box that says, I need an Asus ACPI driver installed.
Yep.
What is that, and where do I get one?
I will tell you, I also have an Asus netbook, and I got, Neverware on it because I couldn't take that. ACPI stands for Advanced Configuration and Power Interface.
Okay.
Pretty much
power saving program.
Does all the power stuff, right? It does discovery and configuration of hardware components. Does power management, and that's the thing that'll put the computer to sleep, or will put the hard drive to sleep while the system is running. It does a bunch of status monitoring internally. That's probably definitely something obviously you are going to need. I'm shocked that it isn't installed, but oh no, of course you just upgraded to Windows 10. So
it might not have it.
It didn't have the one for his specific Asus netbook. Mm-hmm. Right. So what you need to do is go to the Asus website.
Okay.
And look for
a version, whatever, Windows 10 version for that particular model.
Right, you need the ACPI driver for Windows 10 for that specific model of netbook.
See, and this is where we've been telling folks, you know, when they're going to do this Windows update, they've got to make sure that their machine is compatible and ready for Windows 10. Because, you know, all the machines are going to get it because Microsoft just wants everybody to go to Windows 10. They don't care. But you got to do a little homework and verify from the manufacturer that yours is going to be able to handle Windows 10 and that the appropriate drivers for other software packages that you have are also ready for Windows 10. It's a little time-consuming. Now, as a matter of fact, I had one person call me and wanted me to do an upgrade to Windows 10. They asked me how long it was going to take, and I told them, and I gave them a price. They go, oh, that much? That long? I go, well, if you want to do it yourself, go ahead.
Well,
let me ask you a question then, because that is the issue. I had all afternoon, and it took all afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, yeah.
But at one point, I think, if I'm not mistaken, when I first says, yeah, sure, you know, I'll do this upgrade, I thought there was a box or something or a message that came on that it was checking compatibility. So that am I mistaken in that I saw that?
No.
And that it was checking, or did I assume it was doing more of a check than it did?
No, it does indeed do a check.
But not much.
Not much, but apparently it did enough and came back with a message that said you need this particular driver.
Yes. Okay. All right. You know, the message came up like when everything was done.
Yeah.
But it does seem to be working, so it's just not working up to its full capability?
Well, it won't do a lot of that stuff you might want it to do. Like, for example, it may not go to sleep when you close the lid.
Okay. All right, well, I'll do that. I appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. Have fun.
And one thing the compatibility checker doesn't do is check all of your third-party software.
Right.
So especially if you're running old versions of something, old versions of Microsoft Office, old versions of the Adobe Creative Suite, old Quicken, you know, pretty much, you know, old meaning more than 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Those programs may need to be upgraded before they'll work under Windows 10. And sometimes you get in a catch 22 is, you know, so like, you know, the current Quicken 2015, I don't know for sure, but just as an example, it requires Windows 7. So if you're running XP and going to Windows 10, you can't upgrade Quicken first because it won't run on your current OS. So now you upgrade to Windows 10, then you upgrade your Quicken, you know, 2016. Then you try to open your file and the file's too old and you need to convert it. So that's a big danger in getting too far behind in the current operating systems and current software, is it can often make upgrading more and more painful. And the joke is, it's surprising how much a free upgrade can cost. So the upgrade to Windows 10 is free, but you may need to buy more memory. You may need to buy new versions of all the software.
And the time involved. A lot of folks just think...
The time is the biggest thing.
Like he just said, it took most of the afternoon.
Yep.
You know, yes, it can. And then these folks that get, it's going to take you that long? Yeah.
No, it's not going to take you that long. It's going to take Microsoft that long. Don't blame Dave.
Don't shoot the messenger.
That's exactly right. Dave's got nothing to do with it. It's not like he's slowly pushing individual bytes or bits into the computer.
Yeah, and they're not paying me to sit there. You know, I'm not going to sit there the whole afternoon. You know, I get things going, but I'm periodically checking it.
Right.
And that takes time, too.
Right.
And then once it's done, then you got to do the other setup and follow-up, updating the drivers and everything else.
Right. It takes quite a while to get it to...
And before I do it, I always like to make sure the machines are clean. Now, I've got software that I run just to make sure.
Yep. Because...
And of course, if you're doing it yourself, make sure you have good backups.
Yeah. So if your computer already has a malware infection, you know, virus or spyware or something like that, that can prevent the upgrade from installing properly. And that may be some of the...
At the very least, it'll come along with the upgrade.
Right. And that could be a lot of the problems we're hearing from people that have upgraded, that something doesn't work right. Well, there was a virus in there that stopped this file from going
It's protecting it.
So I tell people the first thing they should do is dance the security tango. Once that's done, then you can do the upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's that catch 22. If nothing goes wrong, it might take about an hour.
Yeah.
But something always goes wrong. There's always another driver you have to download.
That's a given. I mean, I'm sorry.
Plus, if it isn't already downloaded, that's going to take a few hours to download because it's 6 bloody gigabytes.
It's 6 gigs. So for me, the upgrade was very fast. One, I'm on Greenlight, so the download was ridiculously fast. Two, it was on my newest laptop, which is a dual core, yada, 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 with 8 gig of RAM. And
new enough not to have any cruft in it.
And it was essentially brand new.
Yeah, if you haven't been accumulating cruft for the last 10 years.
Right, right. So that was fast. And it's, like I said, it's a fast laptop to begin with. So the download and install took a little less than an hour. But particularly if your machine is old, particularly if your machine is underpowered, we just talked to Gary, who has a netbook, which has probably an Atom processor. That's going to, you know, you're going to measure that in at the very least calendars, if not geological eons. It's never going to be fast, but it can be ridiculously slow. All right, back to the phones. Don's calling back from Brighton, New York. Hopefully he's going to tell us that his upgrade to Linux worked perfectly. Don, what's up?
Well, I haven't gotten that far. I'm downloading it now, but I'm very curious. There are so many different versions of Rosa and Mate and Sarah and different things. What's the difference there? I'm downloading a Cinnamon. I think it's Mate. But there's two versions of Mate, and there's something else. I forgot.
Right, right. Here's the deal. The various versions are every 6 months, the Linux community, the Linux people at the heart of the Linux project, put out a new update. So Linux by itself has numbers like 16-4, which means it's the April release of 2016. And then there'll be a 16.10, which is the October release of 2016.
Yeah.
What the Mint people then do is they bring it in and they give it a separate set of numbers of their own as they add whatever they want to it. So for example, the latest one is 18, Sarah, which just came out in April. The 17.3 release, which is Rosa, came out last April. And they stick with the April releases. Came out in 2019, actually. No, didn't come out in 2019. Came out last year. And the reason that they only use the April releases is because those are the long-term support releases. Each of those is supported for 5 years from the date it was created. So, for example, the Rosa release will be supported until April of 2019. So,
okay, I see that, but then within one thing, they have like
versus
like
GNOME.
A mate. And another, you have two versions within one version here.
Right, so there's Cinnamon with no codexes, KDE, Mate, XFCE.
It's kind of like buying a car. All right, I've Ubuntu versus GNOME, you know, all the other. All right, I'm going to get Ford. Now what? Okay, let's get the Escape. All right, now what? Do you want the LS? Do you want the ES? Do you want the SS? So it's
right. They're just different front ends. The back end is the same in every one.
Okay, it's more like what your format looks like. And I haven't been able to figure out what the front end looks, what the differences are by looking at the site.
Right, and
I should download both and see which one I like best.
That certainly is a doable thing.
There are screenshots available of the different KDE versus the other
one. I guess
one,
I'm not
XFCE.
I mean the screenshots.
Right, Steve can put up a link.
It's on that same download link. It's kind of hard to notice that, and it says an addition featuring the KDE desktop. KDE is a link that takes you to that website to see what the screenshot looks like. But yeah, we can put a link to the Cinnamon download links.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, good luck. You will see farther down that row where you can download Cinnamon. Of course, it's also 32-bit versus 64-bit. If you have less than 4 gig in your machine, you should probably download the 32-bit. If you have 4 gig or more, you should download the 64-bit. It depends also on what your processors do. If you've got an old 386 processor, you should download the 32-bit, etc.
Which trim level do you want? Do you want the heated floor mats? You know,
right, exactly. Do you want the V4 engine or the V6 engine? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on the truly great and sorely in need of member support. Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have our buddy Al on the line. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys. It's a beautiful sunny day. Why am I hiding in the basement playing with computers?
Because you're a geek like us.
For sure. Hey, a couple of things for you. Just in the theme of people cutting over to Windows 10. I made the jump a couple months ago, and I'm still going through it, but want to throw a big recommendation out. If anyone's looking for a backup program, and they were familiar with Ghost, and of course that's gone away. Macrium Reflect I've been using for a couple months, and I've been pounding on it pretty hard, and it's great. It's not for the beginner, but for someone who wants something that's got a little power to it and flexibility, I can't say enough good things about it.
And this is a full drive backup, or?
This will do files and folders. It'll do a full image.
Nice.
Whatever you want. It's very flexible.
It'll do a differential image.
It'll differentials, incrementals.
Sweet. Great. And apparently there's a free version.
There's a free version for a one computer type deal. And then if you want, you can buy a 4-user license. Get support and things.
Nice. Very, very nice. Thank you.
And it's very fast, too, which I thought Ghost was pretty good, but this is smoking compared to Ghost.
Nice.
Okay. So, well, again, thanks. Macrium, it's just like it's spelled just like it sounds, M-A-C-R-I-U-M.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Steve will put up a link.
Yeah. Second item for you. Just last week, I was in and out of hearing your show, so you may have touched on this, but password tools, you actually put me on to LastPass a couple years ago, and I researched it and playing with that, and that also is high marks in terms of a strong password tool. You can use it on all sorts of different devices.
Yep, yep. LastPass used to be amazing for me, and then somewhere along the line, there was a glitch in every single thing that I had in LastPass got tripled.
So, all your entries?
Yeah, all my entries. I had three of every entry, and I thought, I can't do this anymore.
Okay. I haven't run into that one.
And no, everybody else I've talked to, I don't know, it was some sort of glitch somewhere for me. Thank you very much.
Aren't you special?
Yeah, I am special. Yeah. I'm now using a program called
NPass. Because he got green light and nobody else did around here.
That's it. You all hate me and you went in and screwed up my LastPass.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, so you're saying karma balances everything out, right?
Exactly.
Sure. It's in the air, you know?
But again, LastPass, just the high points. I've got it on three phones, two tablets, two computers. You can share password accounts with the family members who, if they just want a free version on a single PC, you can share passwords. And
yep. Very, like very that. Cool.
And there's security. Your friends, Steve Gidson and Leo Laporte, hardly endorse it as being solid. So.
We're a little concerned that LogMeIn bought them.
Yeah,
but so far, the original programmer is still along and keeping it working.
Yeah, right. I listened to the podcast where Steve sort of raked him over the coals and held his feet to the fire, but... in the end, I think he was pretty satisfied that they're going to hold true to their words.
Yep.
Yeah.
But again, it's a good, solid product, not for the beginner.
Right. Well, that's part of the problem with all of these things, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, these things have become so sophisticated, there's not a lot of one-button software left anymore.
Yeah. And then part of it's just the environment. I mean, you're trying to have a password program that deals with 152 different programs who do things 10,000 different ways.
Right, exactly right, exactly right.
But anyway.
Now, you know the difference between Kismet and Fate, don't you?
One's more painful?
No. One is a series of inexorable events leading to an inescapable conclusion, and the other is a Broadway musical.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Well, you take have good guys. Have a good weekend.
You too, Al. Have fun. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Apparently, it's also a wireless company.
What was?
Kismet Wireless.
Yes. Kismet is indeed also a wireless company. Thank you for pointing that out.
So when it doesn't, when you don't know if the packets are going to get to the other end or not?
It's Kismet. They don't. That's like I tell you a UDP joke, but I don't really care if you get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, my gosh. The geek jokes are flowing fast and furious, but we're going to stop that now, and we're going to talk to Gary from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's up?
Well, I have some comments about Windows 10 and want to thank
you for clean.
All your advice about updating and getting the right driver. So it went pretty smoothly, although it did take a long time to download it.
Yeah.
But I had some questions for you. I did make a system image and got all my data on a separate hard drive before I did the upgrade. But I wanted to ask, should I make a system repair disk too? I'd made one when the machine I have had Windows 7 on it.
Yes, yes, you should.
Okay.
Yeah, you always should make, and let me make this general for everybody.
Yeah.
Once you have installed Windows 10, you should make that system repair disk. That's one of the choices in one of the menus somewhere.
Right.
I can't lead you to it directly in my head right now, but of course you can always use Cortana to search for system repair disk.
Right, or you can just use backup and restore too.
Right, right, right. And so basically any time you put a new operating system on a machine, once it is properly installed, you should make a system repair disk of some sort.
Right. Okay. just I also wanted to ask about the voice-activated software. About I tried to get used to it on Windows 7 and didn't do very well. And I think it's probably because I don't have a good enough microphone. But how is it on Windows 10?
Well, it again depends on your microphone.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the truth. In general, if you're well, and let's filter this through the fact that I spent 20 years as a professional actor. When you speak plainly and clearly and slowly, any of this software will work pretty well.
Right.
The more you slur your words or mumble or don't have a microphone that's particularly clean, you will have a problem. And I've seen people who had a microphone that was great and then the wire frayed or broke internally and it, you know, you don't notice it from the outside and you suddenly start getting these cracklings and things. And the way you tell that is you actually do a recording.
Right.
And then listen back to the recording.
That's a good idea.
So if you find that it is in some way fuzzy or crackly or, you know, whatever, then you either need a new microphone or a new headset anyway, right? So one way or the other would be a new headset.
Right. New headset.
People who have trouble are the ones who also are the ones who are trying to do it in the open air, right? With the microphone that's in a laptop, for example.
Yeah,
it can be doable, certainly. I'm not saying it can't be, but the environment needs to be exceptional.
Right, it needs to be very quiet.
Right.
Right around it. Okay. Yeah.
And it has to be a dead environment, by the way, but not too dead, right? So it can't be very echoey, and it can't be dampening things to the point where it's hard to hear.
Right.
So, you know, you're way better off with a good microphone.
Yeah. I think that's probably the key.
Right.
Probably the key. I wanted to let your listeners know, too, that the Security Tango works very well on Windows 10. All the freeware that you recommend does transfer over. I did find that the CC Cleaner for a 64-bit, the free CC Cleaner doesn't work on Windows 10. So I think I'll probably upgrade, at least get the trial version, the free trial version of the professional one.
But see if that works, yeah.
Probably buy it.
Yep.
It's such a great tool. I use it all the time.
Yep.
It really kept things going pretty fast.
Good. So, excellent.
What about Cortana? Have you had a lot of experience with it? Is it worth using? Or?
It's okay. I mean, they're all okay up to a certain point.
It makes a cool demo.
Right. They're all okay up to a certain point.
Yeah.
I for what I do, I find that Google now is much more accurate.
Oh, okay.
But Cortana's not bad, and it certainly is right there for you.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
All right.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Google's kind of been at it longer without us knowing it. All that data they've been collecting for years on search results, and then they have the free voicemail, a free Google Voice, that's to learn how people talk, and that all got put into Google Now.
Right. One of the things they did in the beginning was they asked for people to correct the translations, the transcriptions. And that meant if you were somebody who mumbled or you had an accent or whatever, they took that into account, and by you correcting the transcript, they learned that particular set of phonemes.
Yep.
So yeah, it was pretty cool. There were a whole lot of things that Google did really nicely in terms of gathering that information to help essentially crowdsource a voice transcription service.
Yeah.
You know, very, very clever of them. Very clever of them. So we and Cortana and Apple didn't have that luxury.
Right. They're kind of coming into it after the fact and trying to build it up from there.
Right. And you know, no matter how much you love Apple or you love Microsoft, the simple fact that Google had a half a billion people all working on their transcription stuff means that they're ahead of the curve. There's no question they are at the far end of the curve. So that's a pretty good deal. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Lynn from Clymer, New York. Hiya, Lynn. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
I've been better, but I've been a lot worse, too. So.
There you go.
Like most everybody. Anyway, I have one question in particular, at least right this second. On my big Dell, I've decided I'm going to put an SSD in there and put the system, the new Windows 10, on that, because I think that's going to be the only computer I leave on Windows. I think I'll probably put something else on my other computers. But anyway, if I put an SSD in, what is the minimum size that I can use and get everything on except the files?
Well, you probably want a minimum of 20 gig, but I think for Windows 10, it's more. Hold on.
Yeah.
Let me look that up.
Where in the world do you look that up?
And I have, well, it's one of the Windows system requirements. It's how much disk space do you need.
Right, right, right.
But I don't think
16 gig. Free hard disk space, 16 gig. Now, that's the minimum.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, if you're gonna put up an SSD card, now you're going to want to do a little work, because you don't want to put your swap space on there. It depends on how much RAM you have.
I got 16 gigs in it now, and I can go to 32.
Then you don't need any swap space,
frankly. I wouldn't think so.
So, you know, you can ignore the swap space. So in terms of the operating system itself, the problem is that's for the operating system itself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get a lot of choices to where you put your apps and how big the registry is going to grow, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That almost always has to go on the C drive, the boot drive.
Right.
And you kind of want your apps on the boot drive, too, because you want them.
It's going to be faster, wouldn't
right.
it?
Right, yeah.
That's what I would think. And seeing I'm not going to be updating all three of my computers, I'd throw a little more money at one of them and make it work right.
So I'd say get a 256, you know, gig flash drive minimum, and then, you know, put a, you know, 2 or 3 terabyte hard drive on there for everything else, too.
Right, exactly.
Well, I'm figuring I'll have to get back with you, Steve. I still think I'm going to put a backup on the network.
Yeah. Network backup is really nice, especially if you have multiple computers. You can back them all up to that one network drive. And if you have a laptop, you don't have to remember to plug the hard drive in to do your backup, because it can back up wirelessly over your network. We'll often tell our customers that you know, rubber band the hard drive cord to your power cord. So when you plug your laptop in to charge it, you also plug it in to back it up.
Oh, right.
But having a network backup drive, you don't have to remember to do that.
Well, I bought an Asus 3200 router, so I can go right to that.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of routers these days have a USB port on them to make it a network backup drive.
And plus,
one for your printer, one for your
hard drive. TrendNet came with it.
Right.
So it and it's come up a couple times and told me, you probably don't want to go there where you were going.
Yep,
there you go.
I think that gives me quite a lot more protection, because it's a whole different protection
system. At the network level rather than at the computer level.
Right.
At that point, if something happens to your computer, you've still got all those backups.
Mm-hmm.
Something would have to happen to your house for you to lose both your backups. And if that happens, you probably have other issues.
Yeah, right.
Right.
You're absolutely correct, especially an old guy like me. I don't move very fast. If the house caught on fire or something, it might take me with it.
Right. If a meteor hits my house, I'm probably not really going to care that I've got everything backed up to Google.
Right.
This is true.
Yeah.
Lynn, I have to ask you, now, do you listen to us on the radio or over the internet?
Over the internet.
Okay.
I was trying to get you over the radio at different times.
No, okay? I was just, because I was wondering where the heck Clymer is.
It's way down
by Dunkirk, you know, down by Pennsylvania border. It's
I'm
thought
3,000 feet from the border.
Have you not looked outside? We've got a string and a tin can.
Is that to his
that
house?
That goes right to Lynn's house. Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know that. I didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
Thanks for that info, Lynn.
Yep.
All right, have fun.
Yeah, well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And good luck with putting other things on your other machines. That's kind of a fun. He's got a whole set of fun things going on there. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and sorely in need of your member support, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Joe from
Chickawaga, New York.
There we go. What's up, Joe?
Well, I'll go back a little ways. If you want to do any length of voice recognition, dictation, that sort of thing, probably the best thing you can do for yourself is get yourself a headset with a microphone on it.
Yep.
Because that will keep the microphone at a constant distance from your mouth, and it's usually quite loud enough for almost anybody's speech. You know, even if they talk pretty soft, it can have decent pickup.
Yeah, right. That's one of the amazing things about the Amazon Echo is how good the microphones are, that you can be in another room and holler a command and it does it.
Well, part of it is they have multiple microphones.
Yeah.
Just like this laptop does.
Seven mics on the ring. Yeah.
Multiple microphones. So one is if they're far enough apart, one can hear the ambient noise.
Your two ears. It and what your brain does, it can actually execute some algorithms on the sound receiver.
Exactly.
And sort of, you know, you listen to yourself talking or someone else talking in a room, it's normal. But you listen to a one microphone recording of that, oh my goodness, you find out in almost any room in a house is very echoey.
Right, yep. Right.
That's how it can do such a bang-up job if it has more than one microphone separated by about the same distance as a person's ears are.
Right, right. It's exactly right. The other thing is, of course, if you're going to have a headset with a microphone, don't cheap out. You know, get a semi-expensive one, and if you can find it, get one with a windscreen.
Oh, yes. Or as they say in the industry, a dead cat.
Yeah, right.
which nobody's killing any cats. It just looks like a cat that's been skinned. It's a very furry thing that's put over a microphone.
Yep. And the basic idea is that's a windscreen, and what it means is you don't your ease when you're
popping.
When,
oh yes,
pop your peas, right? Which I can't do because there's a windscreen on this thing. At least it reduces that. And also, if you're a breathy sort of speaker, or if you're in a windy environment, as we often are in the summer with air conditioners on.
Ah, yes.
Right? So we don't think about the ambient noise in a room because, honestly, our brains are amazing and will mostly filter that stuff out. But you find a lot of people have to turn their televisions up in the summer because the air conditioner means they have to have it a little louder. They often will say, what, if they're sitting too close to the air conditioner. And it's mainly just because there's that noise in the background.
When I'm doing the Sunday Second Life chat with you guys, I've got a fan next to me in the office.
Right.
And another reason I keep turning my mic off.
Right. So having
it's what we call in audio engineering the noise floor.
Yeah. Yeah,
right, exactly. And so, but most people don't think about that, right? One of the things I did was in Google Docs, you can do voice transcription in the doc thing. So I can speak a document, right?
It's basically a substitute for your keyboard, yes.
Right, and so I've done examples of that with and without a decent microphone. And without the microphone, it's not all that good. And with the microphone, it's pretty flippin' amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And how fast it works and how well it works. And right now we're not talking about whether it's Google or Apple or any of that. What we're talking about is with the microphone, with a good microphone. And again, there's three levels of these things, right? There's the mic that's in your laptop. There's the microphone that's on your headphones. And then there's a purpose-built headset with a little boom mic.
And then there's something like a Heil PR40, which is cost a couple hundred dollars.
Right. So, I have seen people do well with the headset, with the earphones from their phone, right? Which often also the ones that have a mic on them. And that's okay. But in fact, what's better is a purpose-built little headset with a boom mic that comes right out around to your face, and those often will have a windscreen on them, and those are better.
Oh, even better. I'm talking on a Plantronics headset for telephones, and it has noise cancellation because it has a little port on the front, which kind of senses the noise coming at you.
Yep.
And cancels that out from what it hears from the other side from your mouth.
Yep, that's exactly right. And again, that's going to be a little more expensive.
We're using the Electrovoice RE20 at the moment.
Yes.
That's a $500 mic. Holy crap, Rob.
You know what?
On sale for $434 at Amazon.
It's very nice.
Very
that's,
nice mic.
That's what you need to get the kind of quality. So that's exactly right. That's why you sound so good. I still sound like Mickey Mouse on helium. But that's not what we're talking about here. But you're absolutely right, Joe. It's the quality of your equipment.
Helium walks into a bar. The bartender says, we don't sell noble gases here. Or serve noble gases.
All right, so
I'm sorry, I interrupted
you. Google not only operated Google Voice, they actually for a while had an information service up and running, 800-GOOG-411.
Yep.
So they got some voice recognition experience from that.
Yep. Google has done an amazing job in crowdsourcing all the research they ever need done.
I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like the Matrix.
Yeah.
You use all these humans to do the work.
Yep. And it's one giant computer. Douglas Adams is right. Earth is the ultimate computer.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I don't think Google 411 exists anymore, but...
No, they shut it down, unfortunately.
Yeah, they discontinued it. But it was pretty cool, and I used to use it myself. And it was pretty amazing how it worked. And now, of course, you can... I mean, if you want, Google Now will do a Google search for you, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and so you can actually ask Google Now to do a Google search, and it will do it.
Followed by Google. What was the Bison score last night? You know, it'll do that.
Right.
That's right. I'd like to say... a word of endorsement for KeePass X. I like that in particular for one reason. All these sites, I know they're trying to get you to be more secure by doing all this interesting JavaScript and, you know, takes individual key presses instead of a normal form fill and all that, so you can't use your browser form fill stuff. KeePass X simulates typing. So despite all this stuff that a browser and the login page might want to do, it's except for timing, it's exactly like you're typing on a keyboard. The browser can't tell the difference.
Except the reason we started looking into this other stuff is because the folks who own KeePass have a security hole in it that they do not want to fix, because if they do, it cuts off the way they're doing ads.
Oh, yes. Be very precise here. KeePass, kind of bad.
Right.
KeePass X, an independent implementation that just happens to use the KeePass database format. So they, as far as I
Different
know,
company.
They are not vulnerable. KeePass X, the X on the end being very important.
Right. But I don't think and I'd have to look now, but I think that the version that's in like the App Store is KeePass.
And that works wonderful. I have some piece of software that mounts my Google Drive on a subdirectory of my home directory, so that remains in sync with my Nexus 7 and key pass to Droid.
Right.
And all my computers internally. One last thing, looks like we're running short on time.
Yeah, we
are. One last thing I'd like to get into, ask about, is it feasible to take an Ubuntu system and change it into a Debian system? Because I have a computer that's all set up, installed with Ubuntu, but I'm tending to find from the applications I want to run on it, it'd be better if I use Debian.
Well, Ubuntu is based on Debian. So
yeah, okay.
I'm
so
not sure
what I had in mind is just going into the sources.list and listing the Debian repositories instead of the Ubuntu ones and then doing apt-get update.
Theoretically, for most of your software, it would. Anything that you're using that it's Ubuntu specific will stop working. Like if, for example, you're using the new Ubuntu front end. I forget what it's called. Unity.
This is actually a headless server sort of system, so that wouldn't quite matter. But
yeah. I might suggest not doing that, but certainly you could give it a shot.
Well, get an image first and then try it.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Probably the easiest way.
Exactly.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
All right, thanks, Joe. Well, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I particularly want to thank those of you who were kind and generous enough to throw a little donation our way for keeping the station and this show on the air. We want to thank you very much. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. We will be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you next week. Have a truly magnificent Father's Day. Have a great week. And we'll see you in just 166 hours on the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.